Today we have a brief time together, so I would like to touch upon a specific topic which is right in front of us as a nation today and how it correlates with our own lives. Because there is a misconception that those on the spiritual path, on the spiritual journey, should be passive, be at peace all the time, not harm another, and so on and so forth. So certain misunderstandings have arisen because of this. And we should not forget that our primary source of inspiration is the Bhagavad Gita, the entire setting of which is the battlefield, where Lord Krishna is urging Arjuna to fight. So how do we understand this? Those who are drawn to peace, who are of a peaceful nature, who want to know more about life than the material and mundane world, how does all this connect? And it's really quite simple. You see, if we go to the statement of the revered sage Ramana Maharshi, he said, "The purpose of life is to realize the self." What has that got to do with war? The purpose of life is to realize the self. In simpler words, when my spiritual teacher was asked, "Please make it simpler," he said, "The purpose of life is to let life flow in peace and harmony," in very simple words. Now, in the Gita, the highest principle is Swadharma, righteousness, justice, and these kind of attributes. Now, when we look at war and peace, these are polaric opposites in duality. Peaceful times, times of conflict. Pleasure sometimes, pain sometimes. The dualistic framework of life, duality of every conceivable kind. Beginning with basic duality, up and down, left and right, front and back. Health and illness, night and day. We have been born into this dualistic framework of life, of which war and peace is one such framework. It is like a pendulum. If you hold it right to one extreme and leave it, it is going to swing to the extreme end. So an extreme situation has already produced its counterpart. That is why we have seen in Indian mythology, every time things go wrong, an avatar of Vishnu comes to balance the polarity. That is the nature of the cycle of duality. So what has happened in this instance, where there has been extreme provocation, as a culture, as a society, one would say that the land of India, Bharat, has seen oppression over centuries. That is what has happened. And a point in time has been reached where there has been a collective frustration at what has happened in Pahalgam, and it has manifested as a response. This is what is going on. Now, Advaita does not take sides, because the whole principle of Advaita is not to wake up from this dream, this living dream of life, and see it for what it is. So there is no right or wrong as far as Advaita is concerned. Advaita is, the teaching of Advaita is exposing the game to you. Yet each character in the living dream of life plays their role. That is where the dharma comes in. That is precisely what happens. But when we talk about realizing the self, what are the qualities of the self? Because the self is one source consciousness, one self. Can the quality of the self be hatred? Yet hatred is there. In this world, hatred is there. So that hatred is based on a misperception. Another word for it is ignorance. It is there. It cannot be denied. But we could say that the quality of the realized self is peace, silence, stillness. In manifestation, this is how the realized self will reflect. Conflict takes two, something to be against. In our own lives, if we realize the one self, we would not be in conflict with anyone. So peace, which is the opposite of war, while it is in the dualistic framework, the sages of India, the rishis, who were driving the entire spiritual inquiry towards the one self for the upliftment of consciousness, so to speak, knew that a reflection of that self is peace and harmony, not war and destruction. That is why Krishna on the battlefield tells Arjuna, we are in the midst of battle and your duty, which has been designed by me, your nature, your conditioning, everything has been gifted to you for a purpose, and therefore fulfill your duty. That is the peak point. Now, in our own lives, we have to ask ourselves, what are we at war with and whom are we at war with? We are at war with people we don't get along with. If we see in our own lives, whether in our own homes, in our offices, in our schools, colleges, there are people we dislike because they have tried to harm us in thought, word, deed. We are at war with them. We are at war with them because we feel they are acting independently of the oneself. And so this conflict within us, this war, which we are waging on an individual level, disturbs our peace. It is our own peace which is getting disturbed. So while we cannot do anything on the scale of nations, it is an invitation to those on the spiritual journey who are trying to find the deeper meaning of life to ask themselves, in my relationships, whenever there is disharmony, it is actually a gift for me to look at what is arising within my own self. Whenever I have an argument with someone, whenever I use harsh words with someone, or if harsh words are used against me, it is a test. It is an opportunity. You see, if we live lives unconsciously, then this will keep going on till our last breath. We will keep arguing with people, keep fighting with people we don't get along with, running away from people who trouble us, trying to find people who love us. And this cycle is going to go on and on and on. And then a teaching comes, or master, in order to cut this unconscious perpetuating of suffering, as the Buddha called it. How long is this going to go on? Imagine your whole life till your last breath, you are concerned with protecting yourself, your views, your opinions, your judgments, because you hold them so precious. And so you are willing to wage wars with others who have a different point of view. That is what is happening at a personal level. This space, this body, has become a battlefield, because any thought of condemnation, blame, ill will, conflict, strife, jealousy, envy, and so on is arising within my consciousness. It is my war. So I have to ask myself, most of the time, especially in the waking state, am I at war or am I at peace? And the likely answer will be, I am at war. I am at peace in the deep sleep state. Look at God's grace that one third of my life, I am given the gift of deep sleep, which basically means one third of my life, I am absent because I don't know that I exist in deep sleep. And that is when I'm most peaceful, because everyone who wakes up from deep sleep says, I slept very well, which has proved to me that the deepest peace I have experienced is my absence. It is a cosmic joke. The deepest peace I have experienced is my absence. When there was nobody to be troubled, nobody to be pushing the other back, thrusting my view upon the other, and so on and so forth, I am most at peace. The sage, in realizing this, has brought that peace into the waking state. Now, the sage, the enlightened consciousness, when they are faced with the prospect of war, they are not targeting individuals who have done things. That is why Krishna says, be detached. Just do your duty, that is all. So, what is happening is on the battlefield, instead of reacting, one is responding. Because when you have the drishti, when you see that all is one, you have no longer hatred directed at individuals. You see everyone as an instrument through whom a happening has happened. And yet you must do your duty too. So it becomes, in a sense, an impersonal battle to bring about balance, to restore the balance. That is all. It is not a battle, the foundation of which is, I hate you for what you did. In a simple girlfriend-boyfriend relationship, husband-wife relationship, you will find this flip-flop. One day it's beautiful, roses, bright sunshine, birds chirping, and the next day it's the opposite. Because he or she said something which really triggered you, and you say, bloody hell, why did I even get into this relationship? You see how fickle it is, how transient. And if we want to fight battles, we will have enough battles to fight till our last breath. So the sage sees that there is nobody to hate simply because consciousness is all there is. If consciousness is all there is no force apart from me. The person in my life who has disturbed my peace, who I have held guilty of the crime of disturbing my peace and making me feel bad, is an instrument of God, shaped a certain way, designed a certain way, given a set of life experiences which make them say things which they say. In this case, what they said hurt me because I was meant to be hurt. But when I see deep down, I have been designed a certain way. I have been given childhood experiences. Some have been traumatic. Somebody else has been given another set of experiences based on who their parents were, how much money they had, where were they located, which school they sent that person to, and so on and so forth. I realize that everyone has been designed, although differently, by the same God. And then I find my reaction starts changing. If that same person says something which again triggers me, compassion might arise. My God, for you to say such words, how much you must have suffered, otherwise you would not even choose to say such things. What pain must be there inside you to say what you said to me? Earlier, I was not open to this perspective. I was so invested in myself. How dare he say this to me? How dare she do this to me? I'm protecting myself, built up the wall, pushing back. Now I see, my God, this is really a play that is happening. This person is saying things because it is their blueprint, just like I have my own blueprint. In this case, there is strife and hurt. Now, does it mean I have to give hurt back? You hurt me, so I hurt you. Or does it mean, if I am on the spiritual journey, to contemplate, introspect, what is going on here? And once I have seen this design of life, I can then choose on how to express my views. That is called a response. A reaction is a knee-jerk reaction, unconscious. It's very easy to find what triggers a person, and someone close to that person knows it the best. So they'll keep triggering because they get a reaction. It sustains itself. So I poke, you react. I poke, you react because I know I have control over you. So I'll poke you there because I know you react from that poke. This is how the ego plays the drama of a relationship. What happens if the person who pokes you does not get a response? He or she will soon, by and by, lose interest in poking because that control mechanism is now failing. So we have to see whom are we fighting with in daily life? Whom are we at war with? What are our negative thoughts towards certain people in our lives? We have to expose them in the light of consciousness. Why have we been carrying this negative dialogue in our minds about someone, especially those who have harmed us? Because they did something to me. That is why Krishna makes it absolutely clear. Nobody is the doer of their actions. Once you have that understanding, pick up the bow and fight. The ego deluded thinks I am the doer. Chapter 3, verse 27. Deluded thinks I am the doer and so are you. So when it comes to war, when it comes to terrorism, what has happened? Killing the lives, taking lives of innocent people, it means somebody feels I have the power to take their life. That is the greatest misunderstanding. That is why my teacher would say a murder, and most murders are pre-decided with a motive to murder, most, some are spontaneous, is an extreme form of doership. The ego feels so strongly, is so identified that it feels I can take someone's life. That is the greatest misunderstanding, the greatest ignorance. If the self was realized, the one self, as Siddharameshwar Maharaj said, then you will think twice even before killing a mosquito, because you have seen that one life force animate everything. So the greatest misperception is when we kill innocent people. And when there's a force, there are instruments who see this happening, at some point they will step up. Why? As I said earlier, the balance has to be maintained. It does not mean I don't do what I have come here to do. But now I know I am only doing the job I have been assigned. That is why Ramana Maharshi said we must have this awareness that we are only playing out a role assigned to us by a higher power. That is all. We are not doing things to people. We have all come here to play a role. But we will find by and by in our own lives, when we see this one hand of God above everyone's head, including the stranger on the road, our internal state will be more and more peaceful because our minds, our agitated minds, which are at war with others or with ourselves, is dying down. Why is it dying down? Because as Ramana Maharshi said, there are no others. I'm just seeing the play of consciousness exposing itself to me. So I am losing my reactivity to people. Towards people, less and less reactive, more and more responsive. It does not mean that I will be all kind words, flowery language. It does not mean that. There is this misconception that India's sages were so kind, so sweet, so loving. Sai Baba of Shirdi had a temper and had a foul mouth. People get shocked. Please go and read. So these are misconceptions. The main thing is the person on the spiritual journey is concerned with the heart of the matter. What is the heart of the matter? It literally means that this is matter, flesh is matter, this is matter, the room is matter. And what is the heart of the matter? What is at the heart of it? And that heart, which is called Vishal Hriday, large heart, is the heart of consciousness, the heart of conscious awareness, the heart of awareness which you operate from, so that tomorrow, whoever you may meet a friend who you're not very fond of because you have other closer friends, but if that friend wants to meet you are available for them. You know that you are not as fond of them as someone else. But you are fully open and available for that person because you have kept your judgments aside and you have seen this is an equal expression of the divine. So in your mind, you're not thinking, oh, I'm wasting my time. Why am I doing this? I wish I was not here. Would you dare do that if God sat in front of you? Can you see how absurd this whole thing is? If you lived the realization that everyone is an expression of God, wouldn't you be fully present for that person? Wouldn't you feel that the person in front of me has been created by the same source? Yes, in life, in the manifest world, I am designed a certain way. For example, if I'm quiet by nature, I resonate with people who are quiet by nature, no doubt. So I may have my preferences based on my inclinations, but would I ever judge someone who is not so? So judgments drop immediately about anyone. You see, this is all very practical. This is not rocket science. This is not about wearing orange robes, becoming an ascetic, going to Rishikesh, living in a cave. Eckhart Tolle was quite right. That's far harder to do. Daily living is where enlightenment is found. That is why in India you have the tradition of householder gurus. They have walked the talk. They have been through relationships. That is why in ancient days, not just in India, around the world, you had kings, not as part of a royal bloodline. They were enlightened kings. And because they were enlightened, they were crowned. That crown is the crown, Sahasrar Chakra, the thousand petal lotus is the crown. That became the symbol of the king. Today it is a piece of metal. There's a science behind this all. Why do we enter temples, whether in India or in France, the cathedrals, and the bell is on top? Sahasrar Chakra, the bell of consciousness. Why are you doing ting ting? Raising consciousness. Where? Above the mind. That is the aspiration. So you see, everything is the opposite of what you think it is. And that is why we have been given buddhi. That is why some people are drawn to the path of Gyan Yoga, understanding. I've been given a mind. Let me use it to see what's behind this illusion of separation. It's that is why the human birth is so cherished. If you would go to the Gurukuls, they would tell you your first gratitude and gratefulness to God is to have given you this human birth. Why? Because the human being is the only species which is aware. I am aware that I am. I exist. Now imagine you have been given this gift and you live a life of misery and suffering till your last breath. Wouldn't it be a wasted gift? That is not why you and I are here. That is a waste of the human being. Because 99%, as Krishna says, are living in the past or in the future. We are either living as human beings or human becomings. None of us are actually human beings because whatever we see is based on what we saw in the past, our past, which created our filters through life, our life experiences. Accumulated as past memories. The baby has no past, conscious past. The baby cannot judge, but we built up layers and layers of memories which became hardwired conditioning. So, whenever we see someone in the moment, we are seeing them through our past. So, if we are seeing them through our past, we are seeing our past. What we are seeing in the now is our past. Then we wonder how we have repeated past patterns because you're seeing the past, you're not seeing the present, and you're certainly not seeing the future. So, what is going to happen is you're going to live this life as a past life. You are living today as a past life, and your whole future is your past life. So, then on your last day, you say, I lived a fantastic past life. So, coming back to where we began from, righteousness, justice, peace. These are reflections of the quality of the oneself. War, conflict is the ego and its identifications. The error, as Joel Goldsmith says, disturbance, noise, friction due to misunderstanding. So there is war, there is peace, and then there is what the Buddha referred to as Sukha Shanti, true peace, the peace which has transcended the duality of war and peace, realizing the self. So that person, they have realized in daily living. It is as if wherever they go, they are stepping into a hall of mirrors. In this world, which I see through physical eyes of duality, I see others. So I go into the hall of mirrors, I see others reflecting. The average person has mistaken the reflection to be apart from me. The realized person knows this is all a reflection of myself. Everything I see is a reflection of the one self. So the realized person goes into the hall of mirrors with no opposition. A barking dog goes into a hall of mirrors, it will see dogs barking and it will bark even more, isn't it? It will think other dogs are barking at it. That is conflict, strife, separation, because it is lost in this illusion of the other. Through living through the heart of awareness, this vision is corrected, and I no longer start seeing life through my eyes of duality, but through the third eye, the eye of singularity, the eye of Shiva, because I'm not mesmerized. As Goldsmith would say, this is a universal hypnotism. What I see, hear, taste, smell, and touch is mesmerizing. But now, because this is operating, I am no longer mesmerized. This, if thine eye be single, thy whole body will be full of light. In the Bible, if thine eye be single, thine whole body will be full of light is the light of consciousness. So the sage knows the person I am meeting is just consciousness wearing a different robe. The average person thinks this person is different from me. Because we have been mesmerized by separation, we don't see and understand that the same consciousness is functioning through everyone. In my kitchen, I know it, that the same electricity is functioning through the microwave, toaster, juicer. I have no argument about it because I know electricity is electricity. And I also know that the juicer produces juice because it's designed to. Do I expect the juicer to make a toast? But in my life, I want people to be different from what they are, different from the way they have been designed by God. Then I start telling them, you should be like this, you should be like that. Who the hell are you? Have you asked yourself, who the hell are you? That is why the sage accepts people the way they are without the least bit of interest to change them. He leaves that to God. Wanting to change someone is a form of violence because, firstly, you think you know better than God. And you don't realize you wanting to change someone is based on your limited perspective, your conditioning, your filters. Isn't it absurd? It is a gross misperception of life to want to change someone and to tell them how to behave. These are subtle acts of violence we commit, and we are concerned with ourselves. Some of us are designed to do things in a big way, impact many lives, go on to the national scene, world scene. Some of us are not designed that way. So we walk where our feet take us and we stand where our feet are. What can I do in this situation? That is all. And my only measure of spiritual progress in life is the degree of peace I feel compared with earlier. That is my only measure of progress. Am I more at peace by and by than earlier? And when I find people telling me that, hey, you know, something has changed, we find you more peaceful, then I truly know, then I'm not even fooling myself. And I may find that other people are attracted to me whom I didn't know before. They just like to be in my presence, maybe from very different backgrounds. It could be someone completely A person you would have no clue would come into your sphere. These things start happening because what we tend to do in our social circles, we are with the people we are comfortable with because we have all learned how to wear masks with each other. So my mask is very comfortable with your mask. So I have my set of friends. We wish each other on our birthdays. We buy nice gifts, family members. It's my comfort zone, but I'm wearing a mask. I go to a country where I don't know anyone, I put my mask down because to hell with it, I don't know anyone. So when I start putting this mask down, I might find that my face attracts people who haven't seen me with my mask. You see? Because we are all projecting constantly an image at home, an image at the workplace, an image with friends, an image with society, an image. We want to be approved. We want to be loved. We want to be accepted. Me, 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 me. Now I know who I am. I am this image which people love and adore and respect and so on. Feels very good because I have misperceived, I have mistaken this identification with this form for who I am, and I have mistaken others with their form for who they are. So this constant misperception has been happening. So someone agrees with my point of view, I feel great. Someone disagrees, I feel diminished. And so I will keep that person who has disagreed with me away because he has diminished my sense of self by disagreeing with me. The one who agrees with, this is my friend. And therefore, the people who disagree with you are, they love you more. Because they are giving you a chance to see through this. Everyone who is diminishing you is your teacher. It does not mean you have to suffer a relationship, of course. Just as Krishna says, you got to decide. Because now you know nobody is the doer. I can choose whether to express myself, whether to walk away, whatever it may be. All options are available. I'm free to choose because now I am operating with the understanding, not with the misunderstanding. You see, that is what happens. If someone is constantly demeaning me, once I've learned my lesson, I've learned that they are who they are free to have their point of view. My lesson is learned. Now I can ask myself, do I need to meet this person again or not? And I may find I don't need to, and I wish them well in my own heart. I don't have to tell them I wish you well. I just say, you know, may God give you the strength to deal with the challenges you will find coming your way, because we are all going to face challenges. This is life. And peace be with you. Earlier, I would move away in offense, in hatred, shunning the other way. Now that is not happening. Yet I'm moving away. You see, there's a big difference here. There's a huge, gigantic difference here. Because this has been learnt, absorbed, assimilated, then I find this situation will not repeat itself. So the heart of awareness, the heart of consciousness, the one heart. In Sufi mysticism, there's a particular stream called the Naqshbandi. There are different streams, silsilas. Qadriya silsila, which I am associated with, there is the Naqshbandi silsila. Naqshbandi silsila, the master would not speak to the disciple because they realized words are just operating at a certain level, so they would transmit through the heart. Ramana Maharshi, the great sage, was mostly found sitting in silence. Now, isn't it so obvious that silence is a quality of the self? Otherwise, they would be jabbering away, right? Silence is a quality of the self. So these qualities, that is why the spiritual aspirant, as my teacher would say, whether they know it or not, are looking for that peace which surpasses understanding, which basically means an unshakable peace. It is so strong, so deep, that no matter what happens in life, it is as if your feet are in the cement of peace. That is what happens. And that is when Joel Goldsmith says, wherever you go, whether it is into a bus, restaurant, airport, your presence becomes a benediction to all because you're going in peace. It becomes a blessing because your mind is at peace. Your being is at peace because that quality of the self is in full expression. And therefore, even when you have to fight dharma, it is done with peace. And what is the proof that it is done with peace is because, as Krishna says, you are not attached to the results. You are not attached to the results because you know thy will be done. Not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. So you're fighting in peace, and everyone has come and had come to play their role. For example, even in the spiritual firmament, we had a sage like Ramana Maharshi who just sat in Tiruvannamalai. Then we had a freedom fighter like Sri Aurobindo, whose job was freedom fighter, realized master. So everyone has come with an assigned role, and that is their dharma. It includes war and peace. That is called mastery. The master knows what they are fighting is a misperception and an error, not an individual. I'm repeating this point. The master's guns are not trained at individuals doing something. And that is why there's a story about the Gita that at the end, Arjuna says, when I shot my arrows, that chariot was going so many feet back every time I shot the arrow, but mine was quite stir. And Krishna quietly gets off Arjuna's chariot and it falls apart. And he says it was stir because I was on it. You see how doership comes from so many angles. So the sage has this full 24/7 understanding of the one power, that even who you perceive to be your enemies are run by the one source. And that is why Jesus tells Pontius Pilate, when he says, look, boss, I'm just doing what these people want. I think you're a good guy. And he says, thou can have no power over me except if it is given to thee from above. So even when he received the news of his crucifixion, he had the full understanding that Pilate was merely the instrument through whom the directive would be passed. All that God made was good, and without him was not made anything that was made. Then who made all this evil in the world? If all that God made was good, it is the egoic mind lost in the divine hypnosis, mesmerized by the show. We think that A leads to B, B leads to C, C leads to D, as my teacher would say. But the law of cause and effect is an arrow double pointed. For D to happen, C had to happen. For C to happen, B had to happen. For B to happen, A had to happen. In the game of chess, at the end of the game, all the pieces go into the same box. But in life, we forget this. It is about winning and losing duality. But we all go into the same box. And so, the enlightened being understands life is a living game of chess. Everyone has been assigned their role. The knight, the bishop, the pawn, the castle, the king, and the queen. On the chessboard of life, which is duality of black and white, both being moved by a higher power. Winning and losing, one side will win, one side will lose, duality of life. But no matter who wins, no matter who loses, when the game is up, it goes, each and every piece goes into the same box. So if we live this understanding of Advait, not two, certainly appears as two, not two. Certainly appears as me versus the other, not me versus the other, me and the other. As my teacher would say, me and the other are the polaric opposites. Just like black and white, left and right, up and down. But as far as the ego is concerned, the me and the other became me versus the other. And all that happens when the understanding goes to the heart is life, which has been lived me versus the other, recalibrates to me and the other. In other words, when I realize that I'm telling people how they should be and should behave, which means I'm acting like God, but when I realize that I am an object just like the other, I have recalibrated my position and moved from me versus the other to me and the other. The sage lives their life as me and the other. They still have to live as a me. The sage has an ego, but as Ramana Maharshi says, it is like the remnants of a burnt rope. It cannot be used to tie anything down. But the sage will still respond to his name being called. The ego is part of this manifestation, identification with the body. But because the sense of doership is uprooted, you could call it a harmless ego. And what does a harmless ego mean? It means an ego which can do no harm to the other or itself. It does not mean that the sage does not have an ego. If you called any realized master by their name, they will respond, "Yes, what can I do for you?" That is the ego, identification with name and form. But that ego has lost its cherished possession, which is doership. And the sage lives in spontaneity because the sage is not living in the past. That is why when someone asked Nisargadatta Maharaj, "What would you do if I came running to you with a knife?" Someone asked this in his satsang, and his answer was, "I don't know. We'll have to see what happens at that time." No preconceived notions how I should behave or not behave or any such thing. I don't know what will happen. For example, a sage sees injustice being done to children or abuse or whatever. In that moment, how the sage reacts, even the sage does not know. It is a reaction in the moment. But the sage knows this: all actions have consequences. And therefore, the sage is detached. You see, so when I read the essence of the Gita, what was coming to me was this: the qualities of the oneself, detachment, equanimity, calm, peace, these are reflections of the oneself. Someone asked a question on love and emotions before this talk began. And this is the topic for another day, another satsang. But one thing I would like to leave you all with is this word love. Not the love which is the opposite of hate and duality, because love turns into hate, but true love. A love which has no opposite. True love is very cold.
A human being will find true love to be very cold. Why? See, Osho was quite right when he said the Buddha's love was perceived as a cold love. You see, because if you love everyone equally, if you have a total acceptance of everyone in your life for the way God created them, it becomes a cold love because it's no longer personal. Because the nature of consciousness is love.
Consciousness does not have to do love. The nature of consciousness is love. If I live this realization that all there is consciousness, including my boss at work who was responsible for me losing my job, including my friend in school who bullied me, when I realize that whatever I have experienced in life, whoever I have experienced in life, I now see that it is an expression of the one source consciousness because there is no other, then my nature by and by becomes a total acceptance of what is, a total acceptance of the will of God, a total acceptance of people for the way they have been designed by God, especially those who hurt me, but a total acceptance. Then one could say that one is an expression of true love, not this emotional love which is on a high when you're really loved by someone and then that person doesn't love you and you fall down like a pack of cards. Because that is just a play of the egoic structure. This is me. People love me. Oh my God, people hate me. People love me. People hate me. When I see that there are no people, I am being myself who I am. If my nature is to be generous and loving and giving, I express that nature. I don't withhold because someone withheld from me. Then I am at peace. Thank you.